This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime. We'll begin this week with Barry Craig, confidential investigator, and Murder in Wax, his story from November 21st, 1951. After that, it's The Adventures of Philip Marlowe and The Ebony Link, their story from May 28th, 1949.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
One kind of free lodging that leaves everyone cold, folks, is when it's yours, by courtesy of the city morgue.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. There's one little thing a confidential investigator has in common with a crooner or a tap dancer. Ballyhoo. You can't get enough of it. The right kind of publicity break, with pictures and ads, and your fee skyrockets. Even better than money, you promote your pick of jobs, scoop off the cream. I wangled me a break like that. A lady reporter, Mona Gale, assigned to follow me around by the True Life Picture magazine. An elegant redhead, lugging a camera and a notebook, she'd been ordered to profile me and get the story of my life from cradle to now. But the assignment had her missed, I could see. I wasn't important enough people for her.
Is there some point to this dreary hike you've got me on, Mr. Craig?
Yeah, there is. Tenement Row, near the dock. America's melting pot. Out of it comes governors, songwriters, bookies. Look around you.
I have looked around me.
Then start taking notes. Garfield Place. I was a kid on this block. That rat trap there. I played stickball off the stoop. Go ahead, sister, make with a pencil.
Must I?
Posterity will want to know.
Are you naturally egotistic, Mr. Craig?
Are you naturally a snob?
I'm tired.
So have a seat. Here, on the stoop. Ah. What's better than sitting? Grand view, huh?
Great. Dirty-faced children, pushcart, squalor. Isn't there some other way of profiling you, Mr. Craig?
Like?
Oh, one of those celebrated cases you perform in so heroically. Couldn't I just watch you at work?
Sure. If I had a case, which right now I haven't. Come on, beautiful. Get the feel of this block. Imagine back to me as a kid. That kid over there, reading a comic. Now, he could be me once upon a time.
How about that weird-looking boy carrying the parrot?
Boy carrying a what?
Parrot.
Well, yes. What do you know? The kid is carrying a parrot.
And coming this way, too. He wants to pose for a before-and-after picture with you.
Hey, want to buy a parrot, mister, for cheap, mister?
I don't think so, sonny. He yours?
No, I found him on a dock. Lost.
He's sick.
Sick?
Yeah, look at the blood on his foot.
Yeah, it is blood. Bring him closer.
Examine him for, like a doctor.
Funny, the parrot hasn't been hurt. Not a scratch on him, I can see.
But the blood?
I'll pretend. It's human blood.
Human blood, Mr. Craig?
Yeah. Now, figure that.
Oh, if only the parrot could talk.
Hey, talk's good. Watch. Hey, go ahead, you talk.
Don't shoot me. Don't shoot me.
Is that the parrot talking, or is the boy a ventriloquist?
The parrot, all right. Yelling bloody murder. Sit tight, sister. You hold on to that parrot.
Where are you going?
To telephone check with Lieutenant Trav Rogers at police headquarters. I want to know what bloody corpse the parrot belongs to. Could be you will be watching me work, after all. Mona got to watch me work. Over the phone, Lieutenant Trav Rogers set up a date for the parrot to be reunited with his master. The setting for the sentimental reunion was the city morgue.
Roll him out, Ernie. The parrot belonged to him, Craig.
Oh, steady, Mona. Who was he, Trav?
Vince Larimer, according to an identification card in his wallet. was found on the docks beside an empty birdcage. Shot to death by an unknown assailant.
And?
We traced him to a banana boat. He booked passage from Honduras to New York.
Period?
Period. On ship, Larmer kept to himself, stayed in his cabin. A mystery figure, isn't that how a reporter would headline him, Miss Gale? That parrot you two chanced across was Larmer's only known companion.
Can I see the cage the parrot came in, Roger?
If you must meddle.
I'm being immortalized by True Life magazine, so please don't louse it up.
This is the cage.
How do you figure the parrot escaped, Trim?
Larmer was shot. He dropped the cage. This padlock broke off in the fall. The cage door flew open, et cetera, et cetera.
And the parrot dropped a walk, huh? No, Lieutenant, I don't think so.
You don't?
Not enough concussion for a padlock to snap off. Larmer could only be carrying the cage a couple of feet off the ground.
So?
Look at the twist in the wire here, where the padlock was originally secured.
Wire is unusually twisted.
The padlock didn't break off. It was broken off, deliberately.
But why would a killer stop to do that, Craig?
I'm puzzled like you're puzzled. Any other personal belongings found on the late Vince Larmer?
Just this wristwatch, pocket knife, the silver ring.
The silver wedding ring. The end?
The dead end. A corpse, a parent, a few meaningless trinkets. Where would you go from here, Mr. Holmes?
Oh, yes, you're working hard at lashing me up with Mona. But it so happened a detour developed in the dead end. The next morning, while I was sorting my mail over coffee and sinkers in the crosstown diner, and while waiting for the red-headed Mona to show up for a day's grind, the mail was the usual garbage. Bills, all of them stamped final notice. Circulars advising me where to get my pants sprayed, where to buy my geranium, and one circular I really stopped to read. The Starbright Park Museum of Murder, exhibits in wax. The circular entitled Sarah to a 50% admission discount.
Good morning, Mr. Craig.
The ripened friendship we've got, it's time you call me Barry.
With a good morning kiss.
If that's how you like to start your day.
Look, I was assigned to you to play Boswell, Barry, not Madame Bovary. And what, pray, have you in store for me today?
A trip to the Starbright Amusement Park.
Amusement Park?
Read the circular.
Bargain rate. So?
Read where it says about the new wax exhibit.
Oh, see, the brutal murder of Vince Larmer. So real, it will startle you. Hey. Vince Larmer?
Our corpse of yesterday.
But how...
How could a wax exhibit already be set up for the customers less than 24 hours after the murder happened?
Yes, and circulars printed.
Printed and in the mail. One of them in the mail to me.
You think it was purposeful?
I'd be a dope not to think that. I'm not only being invited to get a look at Vince Larmer being shot, but also at who is shooting him. All this in wax.
It's incredible.
I'm in an incredible business, beautiful. In what other business can you get an educated redhead personally assigned to you? Starbright Park was a ramshackle amusement area, a stone's throw off a public highway.
Well, here's your Museum of Murder. Those signs, shocking, sensational, lurid.
And closed. No ticket taker, no open door.
It's boarded up?
There's a bell here, this side door.
What do you want?
A word with the owner, lady.
I'm the owner.
Oh. I'm Barry Craig. This is Miss Gale.
So what?
I got a circular from you in this morning's mail. It's this one.
You and 1,000 other people, mister. Everybody from A to C in the telephone directory.
Oh. And you didn't mean the circular especially for me?
Are you out of your mind?
Often. The circular advertises an exhibit of the murder of a man named Vince Larmer.
You come to prove to me you can read?
And also to see the exhibit.
Another time when we're open.
You're closed?
For safety repairs. The building department found 14 violations.
Oh.
Come again.
Wait. I want in.
You say that like a cop.
Invite us in. At an Fun, Laura?
It's gruesome.
Snyder and Ruth Gray in the hot seat. Dillinger bleeding all over Chicago sidewalk. Why, baby, you're holding hands.
I get affectionate and morbid surroundings. The Vince Larimer murder's the last one in the row, right after Bluebeard.
It is.
Some light on the subject, please.
I got no lights to switch on. The power battery's disconnected. Another order of the almighty building department. Here, you can use this flashlight.
Thanks. Hey, quite a likeness.
Larry, the victim does look like Vince Larimer.
Like Larimer posed for it. Even the clothes, the pinstripe suit.
And holding a cage with the parrot still in it.
The minutes before the actual murder, the scene's supposed to be. Miss, or is it Madam?
It's Dolly. Dolly Flanders.
Dolly, the hooded killer holding the gun. Why the hood?
I don't get your question.
Is there a head, a face under the hood?
Yes, I guess there is.
Model, how?
How?
In the likeness of the killer, I mean.
In the likeness? Well, how could that be?
That's a question I'm saving for later. First, suppose you raise the hood. Get in there and raise it, Dolly.
Don't raise it, Dolly.
Dolly!
Voices jump you all the time in my business, Mona. You take it calmly.
Raise as you are, Dolly. Craig?
Yeah?
Drop that flashlight. Try beaming it at me and... Okay, stubborn.
Dolly, he shot you!
No. Bullseye on the flashlight. My wrist dead from the concussion.
Get flat on the ground, face down, Craig. And your lady friend. Be smart, Craig. From where I am, you're a clay pigeon.
Get down, Mona. Horizontal in a wax museum. Include that in the piece you're writing.
I'll even include it on my headstone.
You, Dolly.
What?
This box of matches. Pick it up. Now this newspaper. I'll roll the newspaper into a torch and light it.
It flipped. What shall I do now?
A wax figure holding the gun. Stick the torch under the hood and hold it there. Let's see how fast it melts.
With the figure melted down, my gun-happy friend took one last precaution.
I hate working over a guy when he's down.
But you will.
So you'll stay put while I leave?
Bomb burst in my head set off a chain reaction. The last thing I heard before being blown to bits was Mona screaming. I came around. A long night and 100 years later, I came around. There was a face looking down on me. Pretty with red hair. Red eyes. Red eyes from crying. Crying over me.
Barry.
And music. Bird music? Sing music, Mona.
It's a yellow canary singing. You're in Dolly Flanders' office.
Dolly Flanders? Dolly.
I'm not responsible for what happened out there.
Who was he?
I don't know any more than you do, Doc, like it was.
He didn't want me to see the face under the hood.
Because it was his own face, Barry. He's the man who murdered Vince Larimer.
Yeah, the obvious conclusion. Maybe even too obvious. Dolly.
What?
How come a wax exhibit here dramatizes a murder that happened only yesterday?
You tell me.
Don't you order your own exhibits?
No, I take what's shipped to me on a rental basis. So much a season.
Shipped to you by whom?
A Mr. Scala. Fernando Scala, a wax sculptor.
Where do I find Scala?
He's got a studio in Havemeyer Flats near the railroad yard. Number 179. You through third degree in me?
No. How come you, a woman, run this kind of a business? Your husband, isn't he with you?
How'd you know I had a husband?
The silver wedding ring on your finger.
Oh. Well, coming back to your first question about me and this business.
Yes?
I won't be in it anymore after today.
Why not?
I just sold it, as is, lock, stock, and barrel.
Who to?
Do I have to answer that, too?
Not if it's a secret.
It's no secret. Here's my copy of the bill of sale.
Know ye by these presents that Howard Crump, purchaser, has this day for the sum of...
Mr. Howard Crump thinks he's going to coin a mint running this museum, as it should be run, so he says.
Won't he coin a mint?
He'll starve to death.
That yellow canary of yours, you ever let it out of its cage?
Why should I do a fool thing like that?
Skip it. Expecting visitors, Dolly?
Crump. He haunts the place, but see, I don't cart nothing away now that he's bought the place. Come in, Crump.
Dolly? Oh, excuse me.
This is Mr. Craig. With him is Miss Gale.
How do you do?
Congratulations on your purchase, Mr. Crump.
Oh, you know?
Yeah, Dolly was telling us. Dolly said you're convinced there's a profit in murder.
Hmm? Oh. That's a curious way to put it.
Then you put it.
Yes, I believe a wax museum can be run profitably. With, of course, judicious management and promotion. The underlying principle, Mr. Craig, in any business...
Cut. My aching head, Crump. The head I'm taking out of here is already twice the size I came in with. Coming, Mona? Outside the wax museum in a drugstore, while Mona calmed her fevered nerves with a double coke, I got the cracks in my skull glued and an iodine pomade where it lumped. After that, I telephoned police headquarters. Hello, Lieutenant Trav Rogers? Never mind paging him, Buster. A message will do from Barry Craig. Tell him to check Prince Lorimer's fingerprints with police files. Pronto. They're asking more questions than I've got answers. Like Dolly had said, the Havemeyer Flat studio of Fernando Scala, wax sculptor specializing in murder, overlooked the railroad yard. Bite-sized guy Scala, the mouth of a mustache and the look of a fox. With those trains, how can you concentrate on your wax modeling, Scala?
Even better with the trains, Mr. Craig. I am filled with a wild rhythm.
Spare me the poetry.
Then, for the lady.
Spare her the poetry, too.
All right. I say only what you want me to say.
No wonder. Where do you keep your crystal ball?
Crystal ball?
You identified the man who murdered Vince Lorimer.
I identified a murder? You are joking.
You model the victim and you model the killer.
Oh, but you are surely mistaken.
Am I surely mistaken?
I model the victim, yes, from the newspaper pictures. And from the imagination also. But the killer, him I did not model.
You didn't, huh?
Oh, just a head with no face. A head I cover up with a hood because I cannot know the face.
Who telephoned you in advance of my coming, scholar? Prime you on how to answer me.
Telephone me? But I swear.
Was it Dolly Flanders, maybe?
Dolly Flanders, the owner of the museum?
Dolly Flanders, the ex-owner of the museum.
Oh, no, she did not telephone to me. Now, if this interview is over...
I'm to scram and take Mona.
My apologies for it, but I have so much work.
You're a shrewd customer, Scala.
Thank you, Mr. Craig, for the great compliment. There are no, flies on you either. Oh, excuse me.
He told all he's going to, Mona, so let's go.
Is there some way of compelling the truth?
Yeah, way to subdue. But I don't think you could stand watching it.
Mr. Craig.
What?
This is a telephone call. It is for you.
Nice job of acting mystified, Scala, over a prearranged deal. Give me the phone. Hello?
Craig?
You know it's Craig.
Guess who this is?
The guy I've got a date with, that's for sure.
If you live. I won't just shoot a flashlight out of your hand the next time.
Through talking?
About. I'm on your tail, Craig, every minute. I followed you to Dolly's and I followed you to Scala's. You better stop chasing around asking people questions, Craig. You better stop. Or else...
The case began to wrap itself up with a valuable assist credited to the good Lieutenant Trav Rogers. A return message for me, left with Jake the elevator ops in my office building, suggested that I meet Trav post-haste in the Marble Lawn Cemetery.
But why meet in a cemetery?
A favorite long-lost aunt. Rogers wants me to help dig her up. Oh, taxi! Hey, taxi! Trav, where are you?
Craig, I'm over here, the first footpath.
Greetings, ghoul. What do you hear from the beyond?
Read that tombstone in front of you.
In memory of Sam Tracy, born 1910, died 1945. His loving wife, Dolly.
Dolly?
Barry, Dolly!
Don't get into the lieutenant's act, beautiful. It's his show. Let him have the fun.
But not here. Somewhere over a hot cup of coffee. That headstone read, Sam Tracy died 1945. You also died in 1951.
The same man died twice.
What Rogers is saying, Mona, is that our Vince Larimer was also named Sam Tracy once.
Right. We checked Larimer's fingerprints with police files, as per your request. Larimer's prints correspond to the prints we have of a Sam Tracy, a one-time thief and safecracker.
But there is a Sam Tracy now buried in the Marble Lawn Cemetery.
Mona's yet going to convert from reporter to detective. No, beautiful. Whoever's buried in Marble Lawn is a ringer. Someone's buried as Tracy as a trick to free the real Sam Tracy. That is the late Vince Larimer.
That was my guess, too, Barry.
Great minds run on the same channel. Who said that? What was the original Sam Tracy trying to escape from?
A safe robbery in 1945. Tracy made off with a cash haul of $100,000 belonging to a stockbroker named Rufus Scott. The police gave up when Tracy, the phony Tracy, as it turns out now, died.
Died how?
In a rooming house fire while hiding out.
And the 100 G's?
Went up in smoke. So the police thought, I mean. As did the insurance detective in the case.
Insurance detective?
A certain Sandy Dowell. An eager beaver in his day. Dowell chased Tracy all over North America before the fire burned him out of the case and into retirement. Well, you got something you can contribute, Craig?
This. Sam Tracy, alias the late Vince Larimer, was the husband of Dolly, the ex-owner of the Starbright Park Museum of Murder.
I read the tombstone, too, genius. Besides, it's a matter of record that Dolly Tracy posed as the widow in the phony burial of her so-called husband in 1945.
I guess Dolly to be the very late Larimer's widow this morning.
By divination?
By a silver wedding ring on her finger. An exact replica of the one you found on the corpse.
Well, we know a lot and we know nothing. Tracy got away clean with $100,000. Even got out of the country. Why then did he come back posing as a Vince Larimer? Why take that risk?
And get murdered.
And who released the parrot? And why?
Frankly, Mona, I don't know if that's really significant.
Bet on it, it is, Rogers. It's the key to our killer.
All right, where would the key fit?
Seabright Park, I'd say. Trav?
Yes.
Suppose I call the move. Can you bear it?
If it catches a murderer.
Spoken like a good cop. With Trav swallowing his pride enough to backstop me, I stormed the Museum of Murder.
Yes? You.
Close that door, Crump, quick.
You, seem urgent.
Urgent? There's a rifle-happy wild man tagging after me. Where's Dolly?
Packed up and gone. I've taken possession.
Uh-oh. That's my rifleman. Don't open that door.
Where are you going?
To your office. To telephone for help.
Now, look, Craig, I can't get involved in your affairs. Quick!
Hello. Hello. Dead. Now the line went dead. Someone cut your wires, Crump.
Craig, you can't stay here. I'm running a business, not a headquarters.
You want me dead?
No, but... What's this?
My rifle-happy friend's finding the range.
Quick, get out of here.
I'll be murdered.
That's not my concern. I insist you go.
You want me to walk out at a certain death?
It's certain death anyhow, staying in here, cooped up in here, cornered. Craig, I'll be killed, too. The next bullet might get me.
You're raving, Crump.
And you stay here. The room is a death trap.
You look green, Crump. Sick, as if you're suffocating.
Suffocating? Yes, I am. The room's close. Stifling.
Close and stifling, like a cage?
Yes,
and you hate cages, don't you, Crump? That's why you let parrots out of cages. You can't stand seeing anything caged.
No, I can't stand...
Even the yellow canary. Dolly's yellow canary. The cage is here, but the canary's gone. You emptied that cage too, eh, Crump?
Yes. I can't breathe. I'm suffocating.
Trav and I swapped postmortems and Tony, while Mona took notes. Claustrophobia, the fear of confinement. Crump couldn't stand anything in cages, or being caged or cornered himself, like I made him feel in his office. It even showed in his clothes. Baggy suit, sizes too big. Shirt open at the neck, no necktie.
His clothes gave you the hunch on him.
That and the bill of sale Dolly showed me.
How so?
Crump paid $40,000 for the Museum of Murder. $40,000 for a worthless business.
Blackmail?
It had to be. Dolly knew it was Crump who'd murdered her husband on the dock. She devised a cute way to make Crump pay off.
But why would Crump murder... Oh, wait. I think I know. Crump is really Rufus Scott, the stockbroker Sam Tracy robbed 6 years ago.
Was hired to rob by arrangement. My bet is that Crump invited Tracy to come tap his safe.
I'll buy that, sure. The Scott firm was on the verge of bankruptcy before that robbery. And then Tracy never got to keep the stolen $100,000. He was just a tool.
The patsy. Lucky to escape with his life. That's why he skipped the country.
But, Craig.
But?
Who staged the rooming house fire and the burial of a bogus Sam Tracy?
Somebody who wanted to permanently shut off police interest in Sam Tracy and in the 100 G's. The men say, you were supposed to be Rogers when you stalked me in the Museum of Murder and helped pull Crump apart at the scene.
Ah, The beneficiary of the $100,000 was the thug who worked over you, eh?
A thug who could only be one guy. Trav, your retired insurance dick.
Sandy Dow.
A guy I've got a date with before you have.
Oh, now, Craig, don't be vindictive.
Don't you be casual, Trav, about my head. Before you put the cuffs on Dowell, I'm handing him his cuffs, and that's for sure.
And before you two stalwarts of the law really go at it in earnest, will you tell me if I've got it down correctly?
Some other time, we're going to a huddle over your note. Mm-hmm. Just one footnote to murder. Dolly ordered that wax exhibit from Scala and invited me to come see it. It was her way of forcing Crump to come across by her museum.
The end?
Almost. All it needs now is the clinch.
The clinch, Barry?
Yeah, to keep your storyline straight. Page one, boy meets girl. End page, boy gets girl. Trav.
What?
Vamoose, huh?
But,
All of a sudden, Mona's got that certain primitive look in her educated eye.
Oh. Excuse me for being dense.
Yeah, scram, Lieutenant. Please do not louse Craig up with the press.
Good night, folks. See you next week.
You have been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Murder in Wax, was written by John Robert. Next week, it's the strange story of the naughty necklace, about which Barry Craig has this to say.
Next week, I'll tell you how I was hired to buy a string of pearls, which was almost woven into a noose to hang me with. See you next week, folks.
Featured in the role of Mona was Joan Alexander. Barry Craig, starring William Gargan, was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is Don Pardo speaking.
Now enjoy Meredith Wilson's Music Room on NBC.
Now listen to me, and never forget it. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison of the grave. There's no other end. But they never learn. It was ugly from the start this time. Vicious blackmail that mushroomed into murder, and all because a wild artist on a hilltop, a man in a wheelchair, and a red-haired manicurist were held too tight together by one small ebony link.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of mystery, comes his most famous character and crime's most deadly enemy as we present The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Ebony Link.
I'd spent a dismal day tracking down another wise guy. He thought he could see fast money over the sights of a .45, but it ended up like they all do. He was flat on his face in an alley, his life dripping into a sewer. was what he deserved, and the only feeling I got from it was that I wanted a bath bad. So I went home, but when I stepped out of the elevator and started down the hall, I knew I'd have to postpone it. Because leaning on my doorbell was a redhead who looked very good from a distance. But she lost ground with every step I took. Because the closer I got, the more I saw of a mouth shaped by indecision. Of eyes that were nothing but mascarade caginess and shallow green. And flashy clothes that carried the kind of bargain basement label you can't tear off.
Good evening.
Looking for me?
Yeah, you're a private detective named Marlowe.
I am. Come on in. Have a chair, miss.
Johnson, thanks.
What's your difficulty, Miss Johnson?
Oh, it's not me. It's my sister up in Santa Barbara. Can you go there right away, 812 Seaview Road?
Maybe you should tell me what it's all about, huh?
Well, she loaned a gentleman friend of hers some money.
Okay. That's enough of the sister act, baby. What's the gag?
Gag? Why, I don't think I understand.
Number one, there's no 812 on Seaview Road. It runs into the ocean at the 600 block. I know. I used to live there.
But
number two, when picking a phony name, Johnson is the second most popular in the book.
Yeah, but
and number three, baby, me hiring out as a patsy of any kind is lousy for my business. So you better...
Pick him up.
Oh, no.
I mean it, and I'll shoot if you follow me.
Okay, kid, just don't slam the door on your way out. She backed out fast, pulling the door closed as she went. I gave her 5 seconds head start and then looked in time to see the top of her hat disappearing down the stairs. But before I could follow her, the elevator gate slid open and a dapper man with a square face I'd seen somewhere before hailed me.
Certainly glad I found you, sir. Remember me? Ramsey, Mr. Ivan Pack's chauffeur.
Oh, yeah.
He wants to see you, sir. Says it's very urgent.
Yeah, but I... Well, okay, Ramsey. Where's Mr. Pack now?
Waiting downstairs in the car, sir. I'll show you. We tried your office first, but it was locked. I'm afraid you might have gone out of town. You aren't going, I hope.
No, but it was close. By the way, how is Mr. Pack these days? Still confined to his wheelchair?
Yes, sir. But he gets around fairly well with me to help him, of course.
Mm-hmm.
What's the matter, Mr. Marlowe? Looking for someone?
Not exactly, Ramsey. Chances are she ducked out the back way and still running.
Oh, I beg your pardon, sir. This way, Mr. Marlowe. Here we are.
Oh. Hello, Ivan.
Get in, Marlowe. Thank goodness we found you. Well, just drive around the block, Ramsey.
He said it was urgent. Is it really that bad?
Yes, it is. Roll up the glass there, Marlowe. It's best if even Ramsey doesn't hear this.
Okay.
That's it. Well, Marlowe, I'm being blackmailed again.
Huh?
It happened 6 months ago for $10,000. This time it's $50,000.
Brother, what have they got on you, Evan? What's the lever?
The lever is that I happen to love my wife, Leona. That I happen to feel it's my duty as a husband to protect her reputation and shield her from heartbreak.
I still don't get it.
Marlowe, I tell you this because you're the only person I can trust. Leona spent a year in prison back east when she was a kid, but that's nothing to be ashamed of all your life.
I know. Take it easy.
I'm sorry. Bluntly, I can't afford to throw that much money away. On the other hand, if I don't pay, they threaten to expose Leona as a jailbird. She couldn't stand that, Marlowe.
Mm-hmm.
I know her. She ran away the first time this happened. She said she wouldn't be that kind of burden to me. If she finds out about this new demand, she may do something even more desperate.
Blackmail's always tough. Who's doing it?
I don't know. More, all we have to go on is this letter.
Let's see.
Here. It's got an L.A. postmark. The stationery is a high grade that doesn't match that cheap envelope.
Mm-hmm.
The top of the page has been cut off, see?
Yeah. Strange backhand, too, huh? Hey, this demands a payoff by 12:30 tonight. Why didn't you give me more time?
I just got the letter this afternoon.
Yeah.
Look, Marlowe, I realize what you're up against. Try, will you? Find out who wrote that letter. I have two alternatives, pay him or kill him. Well, I'm no killer. I'll pay if I have to. But maybe, with luck and your help, we can find a soft spot in his armor. What do you say?
Well, I'll try. Don't take any bets, Ivan. Ivan said he'd be in his office all night, then dropped me off at home where I got in my own car, pulled around a big gray sedan in the driveway, and hauled a small sample of the blackmail stationery into the police lab. There I got a break. The boys had it classified in 30 minutes, and after another 30, handed me the names of 2 business houses and 12 hotels in the city that used it. Too many to check in the time allowed, so I called Ivan Pack and started down the list. He stopped me at the 4th hotel, which was the Beverly Crest, with the word that his wife, Leona, had spent a lot of time and money shopping in the hotel's exclusive arcade. So I drove out to the Beverly Crest, watching a big gray sedan in my rearview mirror most of the way. But in the hotel, I killed another hour drawing blanks, even at the writing room blotters. Until on the way out, I got another break. The beauty shop was closing for the night, and inside, slipping a coat over her manicurist uniform, was a redhead. The same redhead who had tried to sacktrack me to Santa Barbara. I followed her out of the hotel, and when she got around to the back, I stopped her.
What do you want?
I got curious about your sister, sister.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have a sister, and I never saw you before in my
life. That's wishful thinking, baby. You can talk here or over a desk at police headquarters, but you're going to talk. Now, which is it?
Wait a minute. No cops.
All right.
Okay, Marlowe. Sure. I'll talk. I got a sister in Santa Barbara, all right. She's a mermaid. She comes up once a year to fish for seagulls, and she wanted you to bait the hook.
Come on, come on. Straighten it out. You're smack in the middle of a lot of trouble, and it's getting deeper fast. Believe me.
No, I'm not, wise guy. You're in the middle. In fact, you got trouble right behind you. Stop it!
By the time I got untangled from the ash cans, all I could see was the back of a big gray sedan taking a corner so fast I only caught the last three numbers of his tag. 440. But as I stood up and dusted myself off, I saw something black and shiny. It was a five-sided ebony cufflink. I dropped it in my pocket as I went inside the hotel again. The fiver to a bellhop got me the manicurist's real name, Rhea Fleming. But even a ten spot failed to raise her address, so I called my client again, tried Rhea's name on him. And that missed, I asked permission to go and see Leona about it. That got me 60 seconds of argument, 10 of dead silence, and finally a very reluctant okay from Ivan. 20 minutes later, I pulled up at 94 Camden Drive, in front of a house sprawling in Spanish that was home to Ivan and Leona Pack. And the delicate dark girl with the shy gray eyes who answered the door was Leona herself.
Yes?
I'm Philip Marlowe from the Sequoia Credit Adjusters, Mrs. Pack. I'm told you patronize a manicurist, Miss Rhea Fleming at the Beverly Crest Hotel.
Why, yes, occasionally. Is anything wrong?
Oh, no, no. Nothing serious at all. May I come in?
Oh, of course.
I'd like to ask you a few questions about Miss Fleming.
Well, I really don't know her very well.
Oh, I understand that. But you might know where she lives, for instance, huh?
Well, I did happen to drop her off one evening.
Oh?
At the corner of Sunset and Mariposa, I think. Won't you sit down, Mr.
Oh, Marlowe? Thanks. Where did she live before she came to Los Angeles?
I have no idea.
You don't, huh? Well, do you happen to know if she writes in a heavy angular backhand?
A heavy...
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Marlowe? May I see your credentials?
Why, of course, if you wish.
No, don't bother. It's happened again, hasn't it? Ivan's received another letter, and I'm... Who are you, really?
Private detective working for Ivan? Oh, that's a cheap trick, I admit it. But we wanted to keep this from you, Leona.
I won't let it happen to
him. Now, wait a minute, wait a minute. Listen to me. Ivan's doing everything possible to stop this business. Now, give us a chance. You're running away now. It'd be the worst thing you could do to us.
So terribly unfair, Marlowe.
We're on your side. Don't you understand that? And you're in a position to help us if you will.
Marlowe, is it Rhea Fleming?
No, she's in on it, but not alone. She doesn't have the brains. But whoever is behind it belongs to this ebony cufflink. Ever see it before, Leona? Think hard.
No. No, I haven't.
No, it's too bad. Well, do you happen to know anybody who drives a big gray sedan? The license number ends in 440.
That might be Bruce Morachek.
Morachek, who's he?
An artist Ivan hired to do a portrait of me.
Mm-hmm.
Picture isn't finished yet. It may never be. Bruce is too temperamental and exacting. But why did you ask about him, Marlowe?
Yeah, because I've been tailed by a gray sedan since I first started in this mess.
Oh, it couldn't be Bruce. I'm sure of that.
Now, we'll see. And Leona, until you hear from me again, promise you won't do anything rash, huh?
Where are you going now, Marlowe?
Put some pressure on Rhea Fleming. Her character has all the sterling qualities of mud pie, and I think she'll crack just as easily. So long, Leona. I'll call you. In spite of what Leona had said, I still thought there might be more to Bruce Morachek than ever got on canvas. When I was out of the house and halfway to my car, I knew I'd have a chance to find out because across the street, a door flew open on a big gray sedan. Better than 6 feet of swarthy but handsome man clambered out and rushed toward me. It wasn't the lock of black wavy hair that dangled dashingly over one eye, but the fact that his hands were curled into very large fists. It gave me a definite them or us feeling about him, and the closer he got, the more certain I was that I'd have to let him have it first. When he got within reach, I did just that.
Ha!
And why are you taking that one over, chum? Try this. How long have you had on that polo shirt? Speak up.
All day. Confound you. But you don't have to knock me down to find that out, you idiot.
No, it was faster that way, and I'm not through yet. You've been tagging me all night, and I don't like it. How come?
You wouldn't understand.
Try me. Come on. I haven't got much time.
All right, all right. Until yesterday, I was working on a portrait of Mrs. Pack.
Yeah?
She's an exquisite subject, but I quit because it became impossible.
Mm-hmm.
She's being so upset by something or someone, she doesn't even look like the same person from one day to the next.
And that's supposed to explain why you've been tailing me all over town?
I told you wouldn't understand. A portrait artist is not only a painter.
He isn't, huh?
He must be a psychologist, a doctor, even a detective, if necessary, when his subject's beauty is being destroyed before his eyes.
Oh, come on.
It's true.
So
I followed Mr. Pack to you and you to the Beverly Crest Hotel because you are up to something. I want to know what it is.
Mm-hmm. Naturally, it wasn't you who put the slug on me at the hotel, huh?
The what?
The slug. Slug.
Ah, no. I saw you walk around to the back, but the time I got there, a car was driving off. I thought you were in it, so I tried to follow, but I lost it.
Yeah?
And then I came up here.
Well, let me tell you something, Morachek, for your own good and your subjects. If you're on the level, go home. And if you're not on the level, brother, you better get out of town while you still can. Good night! I looked back just before I turned the corner, and Morachek was still standing where I'd left him. So I drove out to Sunset and down to Mariposa, where I parked and started walking. And why, I was more than an hour ringing doorbells, interviewing kids, husbands, and homemakers, and running down false leads before I finally found the mailbox labeled Rhea Fleming, Rear, in a brown stucco 2 blocks south. I hacked my way through the underbrush hugging the front house to a converted guest cottage in the back, numbered 8811. I didn't bother to knock. I just walked in.
Hey, darling, I was beginning to think you'd never get... Milo, get out! Get out of here or I'll scream.
I scream louder. Who's the boyfriend you're expecting, Rhea?
I don't have a boyfriend.
It wasn't your grandfather that piled me up at the hotel tonight, baby. It's your last chance. Who was it?
I don't seem to recall the incident you refer to, Marlo.
Now listen, jerk. You're in a rotten blackmailing game right up your earrings. And what's more, your extortion letter went through the mail. Did you get that? That's a federal rap. You can't beat it. I'm going to see that you don't because I'm sick and tired of fooling with you. You're too stupid to realize when you're licked.
Federal rapper. I didn't know that, Marlo. Who are you calling?
Cops, of course. I'm through. I'm putting you out of circulation right now.
No, wait. Don't do that. I'll tell you who's with me.
Okay.
It's... No, I can't.
Rhea, come back here, you fool!
No,
Rhea! Holy smoke. Rhea. Rhea, who was it? Who did this?
Gee, I didn't think you'd go this far. Just didn't realize.
No, I guess you didn't, baby. One down and one to go.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe, but first, if you like the weather here, cloudy with threats, torrid with action, showers of trouble later tonight and tomorrow, you'll find more of the same on Sundays when Danny Clover and Sam Spade go into action. Danny Clover is the thoroughly human, fast-thinking detective of Broadway Is My Beat. And Sam Spade is the, well, who else but the Sam Spade of Dashiell Hammett's fertile, ingenious brain. On most of these same CBS stations tomorrow, you'll find Danny Clover prowling the Great White Way late in the afternoon and Sam Spade on the hunt in the evening. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Ebony Link.
As Rhea Fleming's face relaxed in death, the gaping, frightened people who make up every street scene began to gather. And as each newcomer timidly edged forward and then caught his breath at the sight of the dead girl, and in a small, tight voice asked whoever was standing next to him what had happened, only one thought kept running through my mind. Leona's blackmailer and the murderer of Rhea were one and the same. So leaving my card with an old, toothless biddy who demanded to know why I was running away before the police arrived, I piled into my car and headed for Ivan Pack's office on La Brea. I pulled to a stop just as a chauffeur named Ramsey darted out of the building and into the family limousine, parked at the curb, and pulled away fast. But since Pack was the man I wanted to see, I dismissed the thought of a not-so-merry chase, went to the door and knocked. 5 minutes went by before my client wheeled himself out of an inner cubbyhole and opened up. And another five while I brought him up to date, blow by blow, the redhead's violent death included.
Murdered Marlowe?
Yeah. For my money, the noose fits whoever she's working for, who is also the party that dropped me in the alley behind the Beverly Crest Hotel, and this ebony cufflink, and doing it. Ever see it before?
Why, no, I haven't.
You sure, Ivan? Sure it wasn't once holding a lot of fancy shirt together for one Mr. Morochek, maybe?
Bruce? Well, why him, Marlowe?
Because he's been tagging me all night. Say, tell me, Ivan, how well do you know him?
I met him about 6 or 7 months ago at my club. I don't remember who introduced us.
Yeah, well, that fits. The blackmail started just about that time. Now, look, just to make it a little tighter all the way around, you can't recall who recommended him to you as just the right man to paint Leona's picture, can you?
No, I can't.
Uh-huh.
But on the other hand, Marlowe, neither can I recall having heard anything bad about him.
No.
Now, look, you say he's been following you all night.
Close enough to do a time step. What are you getting at?
Just this. Was he around the place where the girl was killed?
Well, to my knowledge, no. But that shouldn't mean too much because the murder happened after we had our little run-in. So he'd naturally be careful about my seeing him.
Well.
Besides, Ivan, he was going to commit murder, so it's a cinch you'd arrive and depart from 8811 Mariposa without fanfare.
Mariposa? Yeah. 8811 Mariposa, Marlowe?
Yeah.
But that's the address I just saw on a slip of paper in Ramsey's desk. There was a phone number, too.
Wait a minute. Your chauffeur is Rhea Fleming's address?
Yes. Here, get hold of my wheelchair.
Sure.
It's that far desk there, just inside that partition.
You know, Ivan, when I pulled up outside here, I saw Ramsey leave. You know where he was going?
Yes, he was going to dinner.
Unless he hasn't eaten in 5 years, I don't think that's where he was going. He lurched from the curb like it was on fire.
Here you are, Marlowe. The top drawer on the right. Toward the back.
I see it. Yeah. 8811 Mariposa, all right. Phone number and nothing else except this.
What did you find, Marlowe?
A cufflink, Ivan, twin to the one in my pocket. And maybe a murderer who isn't named Morochek.
You mean Ramsey?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that couldn't be.
Why not?
Ramsey's been here with me for the past 2 hours. So you mustn't discount Morochek or anyone else just because of this cufflink and the address.
Well, in that case, no. But I can't include Ramsey along with the late Miss Fleming as at least one accomplice on what's fast getting to be a very elaborate setup. Ivan, do you know where Morochek lives?
Yes, at his studio. Lookout Mountain Road, just off Laurel Canyon Boulevard.
Laurel Canyon.
Well, I don't know the exact address, but you ought to be able to get that from Leona.
Yeah. Well, I'll get in touch with you later, Ivan.
Hello?
Marlowe, Leona. Now, listen hard. Did Bruce Morochek come up to see you after I left? What'd he say?
Well, only that he'd collided with you on the stairs and that he wanted to know who you were, what business you had with me.
Did you tell him?
Of course not. I wouldn't tell anybody anything about this.
He didn't like that, huh?
No, as a matter of fact, that's the reason he went home.
Right away?
Within 5 minutes. Yeah. He said he was going back to his studio and would be there all night if I needed any protection. But why? Is it because of something you found out at Rhea's place?
No, it runs the other way. It's what I didn't find out. She was murdered, Leona.
She was...
Whoever's blackmailing you, I'm positive. But whether or not that's Morochek, I don't know yet. Now, look, what's the number of his place on Lookout Mountain Road, Leona? Come on, fast.
173.
173.
Oh,
thank you, and goodbye. I was 20 minutes wriggling through the thick Hollywood traffic to Laurel Canyon, then another 10 climbing Lookout Mountain Road, which was an abrupt spiral of macadam that belonged in the Alps. So when I parked away from the bay window with roof that was numbered 173... started up through the junior jungle that led to the front door, it was exactly 10 o'clock. And considering the zest of my last meeting with the artist, a good time for me to be careful. So when I knocked on the heavy oak that showed splashes of yellow at the threshold, I did it with the barrel of my .38. When I got no answer, I tried again, louder. It was then that Morochek replied, but not as I had expected, because he was behind me. And his greeting was a fist the size of a cannonball coming at the side of my head fast.
And now, Marlowe, I'll take your gun here. And if I have to use it, I will.
No doubt. It worked before.
Huh? What are you talking about?
Come on, Buster, get off it. You act like a paint. Let's not waste each other's time.
All right. Then inside, Marlowe, where we can get to the point fast and in privacy. Go on.
All right.
The door is not locked, detective. I don't know what you want here, but I'm going to find out, believe me.
You can skip the thumbscrews, Rembrandt. I'll make it very plain for you. I want to know why you think you can get away with a doubleheader like blackmailing Leona and murdering your own accomplice. Any comment?
Yes, you're either stupid or a raving maniac,
Marlowe. Now, listen, Morochek.
No, you listen to me. Leona Peck is a good friend of mine, Marlowe. I'm very fond of her. I'm not going to stand here and be accused of blackmailing her.
And I suppose that talk of murder at 8811 Mariposa also offends, huh?
It does. And until you mentioned it, Marlowe, I didn't even know Leona's trouble was blackmail. And as for a murder, that's something of a Mariposa. I have been here painting since I last saw you.
Which who will swear to?
Nobody.
Ah.
But if you will step over here, you can see that this canvas is fresh, that the paint is still wet.
It was my chance. The second he got in front of his canvas, he forgot he was holding my .38 in his hand. And as he talked, he pointed with the barrel like it was a paintbrush. When I was close to him and my right foot was against one leg of the easel, the time was right.
Marlowe, are you satisfied?
Not quite! Mr. Munnercheck, now since I'll also use this gun if I have to, get up! Stand over there against that wall. Come on! You're going to get a chance to tell that story again, Bruce boy, but this time to the police. And I... Hey, Munnercheck.
What?
That painting there. That's Leona, right?
Huh? Of course that's Leona. Does it look like a battleship?
No comment. But also, Munnercheck, it looks like a lot more, and by that I mean the answer to who's both the blackmailer of Leona and Rhea Fleming's killer. Now I think I know. Apologies and farewell, Buster. You're nothing worse than a sucker.
Yeah, but Marlowe, I don't understand. Where are you going?
To Leona's place. Friend Ramsey is due there at the moment, and that may mean murder again. So long, Rembrandt. I was off the mountain, back onto Laurel Canyon, then over to Sunset and pointed toward Beverly Hills and Leona's house on Camden Drive. I kept my right foot heavy on the accelerator and my mind working just as fast, because no matter which way I added things, I was still basing a lot on a little and a few important points shy of figuring the whole deal. And 5 minutes later, when I was parked and walking toward the door of number 94, nothing was any clearer. But then it didn't seem to matter, because when I glanced in a side window as I reached for the doorbell, I saw Leona sitting alone on the edge of the couch like it was going to blow up any minute. Her face, which was frozen in the half-crazed expression of the condemned man watching his executioner sharpen an axe, told me that Brother Ramsey was already present and probably out of my view with at least a gun in his hand. But since I'd gone this far in what I knew to be a very sorry case, I decided to play a chin out and hand tight over 38 in pocket.
Who is it?
It's me, Leona, Marlowe.
Oh, 1 minute, Marlowe. I look a sight.
Not a bad one, though. Alone?
Yes, come in, won't you? I've been expecting you.
Yeah. Well, I just left Munnercheck, Leona. I was wrong about him being your blackmailer, I mean.
Of course you were. That's what I tried to tell you on the phone, Phil. What finally convinced you?
A picture. You mind if I sit down? I've been doing a lot of running around tonight.
Oh, of course. What picture, Phil?
Oh, the one he did of you. I can't say much for it, though.
No, it isn't too good, is it?
Mm-mm.
But...
Hard to tell me the boy genius, wasn't it?
Yes, I'm interested.
Oh, you should be, Leona. It was the blouse you had on, remember? A white one with cufflinks.
Cufflinks?
Mm-hmm. Ebony ones, like this. The one I showed you when I was here earlier. One you said you didn't recognize. The one out of the set you must have given Ramsey as a present after Bruce Munnercheck was through painting your picture. The one that says the blackmailer of Mr. Ivan Pack is you, Mrs. Ivan Pack.
No.
And you killed Rhea Fleming, too.
No, you're wrong, Marlowe. Why would I kill Rhea?
For the same reason you denied recognizing the cufflink. You didn't want me to get to Ramsey, so you killed
wrong.
Rhea before she could name him
no,
when I was at the cottage.
Kill her.
And then you still couldn't get me to Ramsey, because if I pressured him enough, I'd have to find out his game was cutting in on you, because he knew you were blackmailing yourself.
I heard enough. You're smart, Marlowe, very smart, but how do you think you're going to prove all this? How? Answer me!
All right. Ramsey figured you killed his girlfriend, Rhea. We sent him flying up here from Ivan's office.
No,
to
demand
a bigger cut. Or maybe all of the 50 grand.
I don't
know anything about it. Now that you've graduated from blackmail to murder, I've been waiting and watching
you're
him to make a move.
You're wrong, Marlowe.
But if he hasn't, Leona, he must be dead.
No.
Here. In this house.
Yes,
probably in this room. And that
Mrs.
Pack, you won't be able to explain away. Now, where is it? Where, Leona?
No. He's there, Marlowe. Behind the couch.
I called Ivan Pack and told him he wouldn't have to pay the blackmail money and why. There was a long silence before he said goodbye, and I went to police headquarters where an uncomfortable hour and a half went by before homicide was satisfied and Leona had signed a complete confession. So by the time I got over to my client's office on La Brea, where I knew I had to go, it was almost 12:30, the hour originally set for payoff. When I was inside and sitting next to the man in the wheelchair whose watered eyes never left my face, it was exactly that, straight up and down. A little clock in the corner of the room said so.
Well, Marlowe, I just saved $50,000, didn't I?
Maybe a little more than that, Ivan. Maybe unhappiness for years to come, huh?
Yes, yes, I suppose so.
Leona wanted two things, Ivan. Your dough and Bruce Morochek. She didn't get either one. The 10 grand you paid the first time and the money she was going to get tonight would be a bait to catch a starving artist. But I was wrong about him. He wasn't interested except as an artist. And your chauffeur and your wife's manicurist knew enough between them to try to get a piece of that dough for themselves.
Yes, I owe you a lot, Marlowe.
Oh.
After all, I just said I saved $50,000, didn't I? Even though I lost a wife. Good night, Marlowe. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sure. Night, Evan. Outside, the night air was clear, almost cold. Felt good against my face, so when I got to where my car was parked, I didn't get in right away, but stood next to it. Thought about Ivan Pack, two people he trusted most, his wife and his chauffeur. One already dead, the other soon would be. I reached into my pocket for a cigarette and came out and stayed with a cufflink. The ebony cufflink. Jet black, clear through. I dropped it into the gutter where it belonged. Then got into my car and went home.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler, star Gerald Moore, and are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Script is by Mel Donnelly, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Edgar Berrier, Gene Bates, Larry Dobkin, Georgia Ellis, and Ron Brogan. The special music is by Richard Orant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
I was hired to find a thief, and I did. 1,000 miles from home. But first I found a hammy Othello, a lush with a Luger, and a fresh corpse in the closet. All because the only woman in sight wouldn't play fair.
There's gold in them trills when just a little bit later tonight, Sing It Again comes along, offering a grand prize of $52,000 to some lucky CBS listener. Phone calls will be going out to listeners from coast to coast asking for answers to the merry tuneful riddle songs, which, if you solve one correctly, gives you a chance at the fabulous Phantom Voice Award. Tonight, it's $27,000 in wonderful prizes if you can tell who the Phantom is, plus $25,000 in cash if you can answer one more question about him. So stay tuned to CBS for Sing It Again, which comes along later tonight, and for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS network stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's Case Closed for this week. If you'd like to hear more from Barry Craig, Philip Marlowe, find thousands of other old-time radio shows, and past episodes of this one, just visit relicradio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is available there as well, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. That's how this is all made possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. Talk again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.